Welcome back to Access All Areas, your one-stop shop for all things Lakeland 50 and 100. Joining myself, Stephen Watt, in the studio. Welcome back, John Cassidy. How are we doing, John? It's episode 4 of this malarkey.
It is, and we're very honoured to be invited to do this collaboration with the Montane Lakeland 50 and 100 event. It's only just over 8 weeks till race day.
8 weeks. You could almost hear the intake of breath from listeners. 8 weeks, they'll be deep into their training.
I'm sure there's been a few sharp intakes of breath when I've heard that magical number of 8 weeks, because mostly all the hard work will have been done, I would assume by now, Stephen.
Well, if you're leaving it to the last 8 weeks to cram, it's like what I used to do for exams. You know, it's almost like, yeah, I've got plenty of time to study, Oh, wait a minute, it's tomorrow. I need to study quite a lot. You do get folk who can get away with that, fair play, if that is you, that you're just, you know, able to operate like that. But most folk, yeah, you'll maybe just be up at around about your peak weeks around about now.
Definitely.
The month of June's a biggie.
Aye, we'll be thinking about, a lot of folk will be thinking about putting the final touches to things like tit, and then triple, quadruple checking they've got everything they're happy with. Hopefully by now you're happy with the running kit that you're going to be wearing, but you've got all that emergency kit to have. And I think
all your mandatory stuff.
Yeah, and in this episode,
non-collapsible cup.
Very vital. Very vital. Because you, yes?
If you're anything like John and I, it's pack the bag, how it's going to be on race day, empty it, pack it again, in a different order, put it on, is that comfy, is that joggling about, go out and do your runs, weigh it all on, weigh your, all your kit on, all your mandatory stuff in the back, even though it feels like you're carrying a kitchen sink, get used to it, make sure it's all chaffing anywhere particularly sensitive around the oaksters.
Aye. Well, hopefully folk have done that by now already. But if you haven't, well, use this next 8 weeks productively. Use it as best you can.
And before we flip over and introduce our guest for this episode, if you've not done so already, go back and listen to John and I's review of last year's Lakeland 50 and our experience, which was season 6, episode 5 of the Young Hearts Run Free podcast. Let me pick up a nugget or two and some honest truths in there from your dynamic duo.
I think the organisers of the event listened deeply to that episode because they've made a few changes in there. Or maybe they listened to the original review and made changes last year, and hopefully they'll have done the same again. But Stephen, let's speak about the guest that we've got for this episode. You mentioned nuggets there. This episode is full of golden nuggets aplenty, as all the Access All Areas episodes have been, from our first meeting with Emma Stewart. And then we met with Nikki Knappett and Marvin Walsh, who work at Chapel Style aid station. And most recently, with Matt Neal. Now, this guy we're going to be speaking to in this episode is similar in experience to Matt Neal, but everybody's got their own different story, don't they? And
yes.
Nick Wishart delivers big time, eh?
Sure does. He has 10 years worth of experience going along to Coniston on the last weekend of July. And he's made it a huge part of not just his life, but his whole family's life. And Nick is a proud member of the Dalamere Spartans. Hopefully I've said that right and I've no butchered it. And they are a well-kent trail running club who are in charge of the Mardale Head checkpoint, which is one of they're all brilliant checkpoints. Let's just put one ahead of the other. But it's a very welcome sight, the Mardale Head checkpoint and very well, you'd get well motivated and kicked out if you overstay your welcome.
It's also very well stocked. I think, you know what, they're all welcome, but I think it's maybe one of my favourites, Mardale Head, because it's at the end of that big long Triffid thing. Going along that Hawswater, isn't it? It's along at the end of there. It's a very welcome sight. But you know what? As with all things Lakeland, after every single aid station, there's a climb out of there, isn't there? And this one does not let you down on that front, man.
It doesn't. Gates Carf. Yes. Honestly, I'm plucking this out of my brain the day. It's my research team have let me down. So, yeah, it is a nippy wee climb. And get that into your head if this is your first time doing the 100 or the 50, or you've never been at the lakes before doing it. After every checkpoint, there's a nippy climb. That is your window of opportunity to consume food.
Yes. Refuel.
For likes of us, anyway.
Aye, get as much down your neck as you can, because you're going to be walking mostly up these hills. So as Stephen says, it's an opportunity to take some stuff at the aid station, get it down your throat before you hit the top, and then you can kick on and run along to the next aid station and repeat until you get to the end.
Yes.
So, yeah. So Nick Wishart.
Yeah, over to Nick. Some absolutely stellar advice in there. So enjoy it, and we'll speak to you all again soon.
What's the sense in sharing this one and only life? Welcome back to Access All Areas. We are joined this evening with Mr. Nick Wishart. Good evening, Nick. How are you doing?
Good evening, guys. I'm really well. How are you?
I'm all good, Stephen.
I'm picky boo.
Cool. Right. Let's crack on. Let's get tore right in. So what we'd like to do, Nick, is ask you to describe the Lakeland 50/100 in three words. What three words would you use?
Three words. The word that Mr. Lathwaite will probably be approved of, I guess the first word for me would be family, because definitely a Lakeland family feel to the whole event, the whole weekend. It's an addiction. This would be my tenth year in Coniston. I spend every July in Coniston, it seems. And inclusiveness, because it's all inclusive from the back of the pack guys to the guys at the elite end. I feel everybody gets treated the same way. So I guess that's probably my three kind of go-to words.
I think Mark Lathwaite's just got his advert for the future years of the Lakeland 50 and 100. Brilliant. And it totally resonates as well. I mean, Stephen, you and I have only experienced it twice, but I've certainly experienced the Lakeland family.
When you said all inclusive there, John's eyes lit up. I thought he was going to a different track entirely.
We could see that gets my vote.
See, yeah. I missed that aid station. Yeah,
that's okay. What the wristband was for. But actually, it's also pretty all inclusive as well. Those aid stations are well stocked.
Yeah, definitely. And 10 addiction. Years. Sorry, Stephen.
Well, that was where I was going. 10-year addiction and continuing that addiction this July.
Yeah. So this will be my 10th year. Obviously, about a year off for COVID. Although I did the virtual 100 in the COVID year. But so this will be my 10th year, and God willing, it'll be my fifth Lakeland 100 finish this year. Should have been a year ago. We'll maybe go down that road shortly, but this should be my fifth finish for the 100, which will give me eight finishes in total for the event. I marshalled in 1 year, and then we had a COVID year. 10 years, the family come every year. That's why Lakeland family, but it's a very inclusive thing for all our family. In fact, my kids now demand that we go into Coniston in July. If I didn't enter the event, I'd actually get lynched. So yeah, it kind of underpins what we do as a family now in July.
Brilliant. And then going back to what attracted you to the event in the first place. So casting your mind back to, I'm assuming, 2013. That would have been what, a first pop at the 50, was it?
Yeah, so 2013, I'd done the 50. Yeah. And really, I didn't even know what an ultra was. When I first started trail running, it was back in 2011. I'd been road running for donkeys. I think I did my first road marathon in 1983. Most of the guys in my running club, when I tell them that, say, I wasn't even born. Right, so I did the Mersey Marathon in 1983. And I stopped road running and I was looking at doing more off-road running. And I came across a new running club in my area called the Delamere Spartans, who literally just started an off-road running club. Guys who like to have a drink and run off-road, and it didn't take themselves too seriously like road running clubs tend to do. And I'd kind of found my happy place. And a couple of guys in the club, Dave Douglas and Stevie Mee, started talking about this race that they'd done the previous year called the Lakeland 100. I'm like, what do you mean, Lakeland 100? And they kind of explained that this 100-mile race that goes around the Lake District, and it was like this fascinating thing. I never knew that people ran for 100 miles. Like, you know, a marathon was the pinnacle, wasn't it? The London Marathon is the pinnacle of athletics. Anyway, fast forward 12 months, and half the club, that at the time we were very small, we all entered. So started training for the Lakeland 50, and that was my longest ever distance when I turned up in 2013 to do the 50.
Right, a couple of questions just jumping into my head. First one is, what was the sign-up process then? Because now it's a big ballot, isn't it? What was 2013 like?
Oh, I just entered when you felt like it. Yeah. It's not none of this fingers on the buzzer, you know, September the 1st at 9 a.m, two computers going, all places gone in like 90 seconds. It was busy. It was a popular race then, but, you know, 10 years ago, I'm thinking back, there wasn't any paranoia. I think you could enter, you know, didn't have to enter on the day. I think I just entered, you know, maybe the week that the race was announced. But it just seemed to rapidly grow, you know, and it's just become this phenomenon in the ultra scene. And I don't think it's the running route. I mean, maybe talk a bit about the actual race route itself, but, you know, there's probably better places to run in the Lake District. Well, it's definitely better routes to run in the Lake District, but it's everything else about the event that gives it what it is. But yeah, 2013, standing there thinking, what am I going to do? I think the furthest I'd run to that point, I'd done the Three Peaks Fell Race. It was about 24 miles around the Yorkshire Three Peaks. And that was as far as I'd gone. So it was like a journey into the unknown.
We'll certainly get to the route, because we've got issues with the route. But more on that in a wee bit. The second half of the 100, the 50, we've got that's been our experience. Yeah. Okay, and then the actual number of entrants in 2013, and we've only experienced this, I'm going to call it a carnival atmosphere that you get at the campsite. Was it as big then? Did they still have the second field? Were they still using that?
No, it was all on one field. But we were all on the one field. And and actually, this is where my family finally went, or certainly my wife went from being a reluctant ultra widow. You know, I used to, you know, go road running, train, then you'd be out for an hour, you'd be home again. Then you start training for this kind of stuff. I'm like, I'm going to Lake District, see you tonight. Or, you know, and she got, you know, there was a bit of tension in our house, shall we say. But then we all rocked up as a family for the weekend on this school field in Coniston. And it was rammed, you know, you got about, I don't know, 1,000 people on the field. And that weekend, like, the spot, you know, again, all part of the inclusiveness side of it. So it was busy there. It felt busy, but you've got a niche sport where a huge number of the people doing this niche sport are all in the same place at the same time. And it's, yeah, it was like a real special thing to experience.
That's a real good point. The fact that it's just it's almost like the Mecca, isn't it, for that weekend for ultra runners and trail runners in the UK. And that was the feeling that you've just described that John and I got as well when we first rocked up. You always camped?
Yeah, so we've always stayed on the field. In fact, then, you know, the more we got into it, we'd go up a couple of days earlier, we'd stay in Coniston Hall, and then decamp onto the field as soon as he could on the Friday. So we spent like a long weekend there, because generally coincided with the kids finishing school for the summer. So we'd literally up shop and move to Coniston for, you know, Wednesday to Sunday, and I'd vanish. It'd be great. You know, it's a really good atmosphere.
Well, like you say, that, you know, ticking the boxes for the family who otherwise it would have been, oh, well, that's dad away for three nights. Well, lucky him going and doing what he loves doing. And yet that inclusiveness and being able to bring them along and be part of that atmosphere that is generated around the camp. And then in Coniston village itself, is it a village?
It's a village. It's only small, isn't it? But, you know, it's like you take over the whole village, and the local people seem, you know, really accepting and friendly. But I think that's as much to do with the giving back that Mark does with, you know, there's certainly an investment in looking after the local community. And so that underpins everything. The atmosphere of the event is to blend in with the environment rather than rock up as a big commercial enterprise and trample all over people's, you know, tranquility in, you know, what is a nice peaceful part of the Lake District. So I think, you know, certainly the field, like, it's literally grown, so there's two fields now, but there's also probably, there's a lot more that goes on for the families, you know, so there's the marquee in the field now and they're banned, and there's, you know, there's a bar and there's more food and stalls and things there. My family have always enjoyed it, because you can't really go and watch the event. It's not like they can really follow you around many places on the route. So there needs to be something for them to just do their own thing and still have it be good for everyone.
I never thought there until Stephen used the word village. It's a very small place, isn't it, Coniston? For the volume of people that descend on it, and when you walk out of the campsite and across that bridge, and there's these, is it the Black Bull? There's another couple of pubs there. If it's a nice day, that's, these tables outside are just rammed with families, not runners, but families and people that are down there supporting it. So it must bring, and I agree, there's a lot of responsibility to the organisers to make sure that it's done properly, but it brings must be a massive financial input to that part of the country as well. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that until now.
So always a few startled tourists kind of kicking about as well, going, what have I landed in here? What is this?
It's a startled tourist, you know, when you start the 100 and you're heading out kind of up towards the copper mine, and you head out onto the track. It's a single track. And if there's somebody who's innocently walking down, they're being up the old man of Coniston, and all of a sudden there's like 400 or 500 people like en masse heading towards them at 6 o'clock in the evening. What's going on? Just to notice what was happening.
So doing the 50, 2013, what was that like? Do you still remember how that felt for you at that time?
yeah. So typically, you know, never done 50 miles. So of course, you know, first of all, you go and stand at the front. Of course you do. I'm going to go stand at the very front and find myself, I think I was sitting next to Marcus Scottney. I don't know who this guy, I'd heard of this awesome ultra run. And he's just chatting there, giving me the time of day. Again, down to earth, no kind of like the elite runners don't stand in a little kind of area away from us mere mortals, chatting on to him for a bit. And then they shout, go, and I'm off. And I'm like at the front of this pack. And you do this ridiculous lap around the field. And you're doing like a 7 minute mile pace running around this lumpy field. And then you come back through the Dale Main kind of estate area, and you're waving to everybody. And then you head out to the middle of nowhere. Before you get to Howtown, you're absolutely goosed. So I think
you just regaled my first 50 experience. Yeah. Absolutely that.
Hammer it. Away you go.
You're like, get some time in the bank here.
Yeah.
And then all these wise folk are just kind of walking. You're like, what are they waiting on?
Some of that.
They want to pass you around pass you at various points along the route. Yeah.
So I think something other than going off like a startled rabbit and paying for it later, I think it was relatively incident free, and I enjoyed it and finished. I did it in about 13 hours, I think. And didn't really have a benchmark, but was really happy with that. And then immediately said, right, I'm coming back next year and I'm going to go faster. And then kind of just, that was it then. And then it was just, I wouldn't have known at that point that 10 years later I'd still be going back, but it was certainly a special kind of feeling.
So that, how many times have you done the 50 then before you made the
fateful decision? So I've done it three times. I did it 2013, 14 and 15. And every year I did it, because of course you come across 100 runners, don't you? You kind of catch them up, you know, somewhere between kind of Howtown and Mardale. And you see these guys doing the death march and people, you know, that are like in a really grim place. And I always said, no way you're catching me doing that. That's just ridiculous. These guys don't even look like they're having fun. But after I'd done my third one, it kind of got to the point where I'd run out of excuses not to do it. It was almost like it was inevitable. You're just doing 100 next year, aren't you? And then before you know it, press the button for the 100. And half the guys in my club had done the same thing, because there'd always be at least 10, 15 of us doing the events between the two distances. And then a little group of us have kind of done the 100 more or less the same each year and followed each other along.
The jump from the 50 to the 100, in that year where you went to go you do your first 100, how did you change your training, or did you change your training?
Yeah, so I was doing more long distance. So up to 2015, 2016, I think the longest race I'd done, I did the Ultimate Trails 110K. So I'd done a 60-odd mile. I'd done the Highland Fling a couple of times, great race. Loved that race again, very similar kind of feel, real kind of like great spirit and camaraderie associated with it. But then thinking, right, okay, how do we go that little bit further? I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to need to enter a 100-mile event. So rather than just doing it the easy way around, I just went and entered the Arc of Attrition in general. I thought, for my first 100-miler, I might as well go for something as a bit of a benchmark. So I'll do something in the middle of winter, along a really gnarly coastal trail, and then back-to-back runs over a weekend, so you'd be picking up bigger mileage weeks without doing single runs that were 40, 50 miles at a time, you know. Went down to Cornwall and ran the Arc of Attrition route over the course of 3 days, with Dave Douglas, one of my partners in crime, and then done that in January, survived that was a real survival course, and then had the Lakeland 100 to be doing it in the July. So I've already done 100 and I've done one in winter. Lakeland 100 can't be as hard as what I've just done. I don't think the training changed a huge amount. Maybe it should have done. Maybe I'd be a bit quicker if I'd actually put a bit of science into my training.
I don't know what it's sensible is that.
No. I just wondered about the volume that you maybe need to increase for the 100. But I suppose the Lakeland 50 is good training for doing the Lakeland 100, isn't it? So a good insight to that. Should have also asked, did you manage to better your 2013 time at the 50?
Yeah, so I think so. The following year, actually 2014, it was roasting hot. I mean, like really, really hot. And I ignored Mark's number one piece of advice. He gives great advice, Mark does. And finally, 10 years later, I'm starting to actually listen to his advice. But in 2014, it was really hot. And he said, people, you know, don't be going for a time. Be the best you can be on the day, given the conditions. But I did the same thing. The shouted go, I ran off around the field like you do. Like an idiot. By the time I got to Mardale, where our club runs the checkpoints, the Delmi Spartans run Mardale, or Spardale as it's known, I was in pieces. I was throwing up everywhere. I was just like a shadow of myself, and managed to kind of get my second and third wind and ran fast. I think I was about an hour and a half faster. Despite having, you know, completely ruined a proper running strategy. And then the third one, I went another hour faster again. So I think I'm 10 hours something, I think is my quickest 50. And I sacked it off and thought, I'll go and do the 100 instead.
Right. Mardale Head, I've got to say about that. It's one, maybe my favourite checkpoint, because
it got better for the first year we done it. I was also in a similar predicament to what you've just described, Nick, when I did the 50 first time. It was warm year 2021. It's quite warm. Years ago. And I was what's the climb out of Mardale Head?
Gates Garth. Yeah, Gates Garth Pass.
There's sort of like big boulders at the side of the path. I was behind one of them, like spewing my guts, like it was just, and I pulled out at Kentmere, managed to death march to Kentmere, and I was like, that's plenty. But Mardale Head checkpoint and the atmosphere and the buzz around about coming in there, because that's a bit of an arduous bit along the walk side.
It's the longest bit, isn't it? It's that longest bit. You run along Horsewater, and I'm sure that reservoir gets longer every year. It's like never ending, particularly when it's hot. It's like a furnace.
And the foliage is quite high, and it means that you've not got really a sighter on your step. And there's quite a lot of uneven terrain underneath, and I was finding it you're putting quite a lot of energy into it for the pace you were going.
I also found it that, but I'm more I'm back of the packer, Nick, and I found there it was just this like line of people, and you were only getting to go as fast as the person in front, and there wasn't the room, because of the Triffid plants. There wasn't the room to navigate past them. No,
and so it's narrow. It's difficult to pass people on there.
So when you get to Mardale Head, it's like there's people and you can
sandwiches,
soup, everything. Absolutely brilliant. I had to speak a wee bit. There was a woman there last year making up cheese sandwiches. No, peanut butter sandwiches, but next to that was little cubes of cheese. So I stood and spoke to her for about 15 minutes. I was just unbelievable. Peanut butter and cheese, everything I ever wanted, but I never knew at the time. loads of salted crisps. Loads of salted crisps and salt and vinegar crisps was brilliant. But actually, every single climb, every single aid station is a nightmare. It was for me. I really struggled with that. Man. And you mentioned Marcus Scottney. He was last seen in the Lakeland at Kentmere making up smoothies and dancing to ABBA. That's the last time he was heard of. Yeah. So there you go.
he's a top lad, and his wife as well, I'm sure she changed the dressing on my foot at Kentmere one year. She kind of like, helped me. But by that point in the 100, you can barely bend. I mean, I can't even get anywhere near my feet, but she's helped me put a little dressing around one ruined piece of my foot. So yeah, it's nice to be waited on by running royalty.
Definitely. I go for the John.
I was just going to say about like injury and things like that. There is a healthy list of essential kit to take. Hopefully people will never ever need everything then there. But as you mentioned, your foot, was that something that you could have took care of yourself? Well, if you could have bent down, as you know what I mean? So what I'm just trying to think about here is, with regards to people getting injured in the first aid type of thing, do you want to speak a wee bit about bumps and bruises?
Yeah, so I think one feature of this race is that it's a foot killer, particularly if you're doing 100, that second 50, because there's so many rocky paths, Gates Garth Pass, Garvin Pass, they're all foot killers. So you're going to get a lot of people with friction issues and lots of blisters. So carrying your own blister kits, I think you need to have some self-sufficiency, just be able to, redress your feet, whether or not you use talcum powder in your socks, or whether I put Gurney Goo. I use Gurney Goo as my kind of go-to thing, or there's stuff called Trench. Something other than Vaseline, because putting Vaseline vanishes. It's great when you put it on, but it vanishes very quickly. And then, of course, once you have got chafing or you've got friction damage, putting anything on isn't really going to help. So you need something more like pseudocreme or something thick, or tape or something to be on there. So I think in your kit bag, the self-sufficiency. You need to have something to dress and wipe and re-bandage your feet. I never recommend Compeed, because it's, once you've got Compeed on something, it ain't coming off. I think if you're in the last few hours of the race and you just need to cover something up and forget about it, then Compeed works. But if you put it over a blister that then needs to be treated further on in the race and you need to see a medic, they'll try and get that off. It'll just de-roof your blister completely. Then you've got a huge area of raw skin and then your race is over. But yeah, I think in terms of kits, first aid kit, you know, practice with it beforehand. You don't want to be suddenly for the first time ever having to do something to your feet mid-race and you don't really know what to do, because you're going to lose a load of time and you're probably just going to waste your time. It'll be ineffective. I mean, there are medics at the checkpoints who'll help you out, but I think you need to try and be self-sufficient, because that medic may be dealing with something more serious when you get there. To kind of practice with what you know works for you. And it's the same with kit. You know, carry the kit that works for you. I think the minimum kit is always what they say. It's the minimum kit. It's not the only kit you should carry. And go with what the weather says. Although in the Lake District, no matter what the weather says at the beginning, it'll change, as you probably found out. It might start roasting hot, 30 degrees, but it's going to tank it down at some point and rain really hard. I think the only year it's not done that was 2021. I don't think I ran in anything other than the vest for the entire 30-odd hours that I was running.
And see, when you say, it's a really good point you made around about there's a minimum kit, but there's a few extras that you'd want to maybe consider. Have you got any particular favourites for yourself that have come in almost, become indispensable?
Definitely. I always have a gilet. So a gilet, if I put a waterproof jacket on, you soon become, you're sweating too much. It's too hot when you're going uphill, and you're unzipping it, and you're up and down. I find a decent gilet will keep your core warm, will keep your body warm, but it won't overheat you. So as well as having a waterproof coat, I'll always take a lightweight gilet. You know, I'm not talking about something padded, I'm talking about something, you know, a thin technical gilet. But just having that on as an extra layer, it just traps a bit more warmth. So gilet is something that won't contribute too much weight in your pack. And I can tell you a story when I got caught out and nearly had hypothermia and nearly pulled out, because I didn't have extra stuff in my kit that I do carry now. And that's a lightweight synthetic layer. A thin lightweight synthetic layer only needs to weigh, you know, a couple hundred, 300 grams, and that can be packed down small enough. But you can wear that as a layer under your waterproof coat. And if you've been injured or you're tired and you're moving more slowly and you lose all that, you know, you lose all of the heat because you're not creating enough heat because you're not moving fast enough, you'll be glad of a insulating layer between your t-shirt and your waterproof coat. So that's probably the best go-to. It'll be in my kit this year.
You started looking at the weather yet?
Giving up looking at the weather now.
It's only eight, 9 weeks away. You start.
It's almost time to start looking at the weather. Long range weather forecast. There's got to be one out there.
Start looking at it in the Gulf of Mexico, thinking, oh, that'll come over there in the middle of July. you make it up as you go along, you know.
I'm studying the jet streams. Isn't anybody studying the jet stream? Surely.
That's what we do in June. No, thanks for that. These are really good tips, ones that I'll actually take away myself and consider. Definitely. Thank you.
What would you say, Nick, has been your most, let's go with the good stuff, right? What's been your most wonderful Lakeland experience?
I guess probably on balance, because first of all, something's gone wrong every single year. That there hadn't been, you know, out of the seven finishes I've got, there's always been some drama. And most of the time it's weather related and or nutrition related, because you get your nutrition wrong, etc. But I think probably my best experience is probably going to have to be my last 100 finish in 2021. Maybe part of that was because it was just post-COVID, and I think we're all just glad to be back out. It was quite weird being in the field with all these people again, you'd kind of got used to your own company. So partly due to that, but I think, and it was roasting hot. I think you mentioned you'd done the 50 that year. It was It was boiling. It must have been over 30 degrees, stood waiting to start that race on the Friday night. But actually, you know, 9 years after having Mark talk about, just, you know, go with the weather. If you've got a time in your head, forget your time that you thought you were going to get, because if the weather is really hot, you'd be stupid to try and go and do something that's not on if the weather changes it. And I think I just managed myself better. So I managed the amount of time I spent in checkpoints. I didn't hang around to sit down and just like burn time. There's 14 checkpoints. You could waste a lot of time in the 100 doing that. I think it was just marginal gains. Mm-hmm. Like the Sky bike racing team, where, you know, they do marginal gains to get a better performance. I didn't run any quicker. In fact, I ran slower because it was so hot. But I think I finished in about 33 hours, but I finished feeling great and just felt like, do you know what? There wasn't any drama. It just was one of those years where just enjoyed it and felt really good. So yeah, probably 2021.
Sounds like race management was the big bonus plus points that particular year. Yeah. You're right what you say about, you know, John's an expert at hanging about checkpoints. It's high up on his CV. He entertains the troops.
Yeah, I'm actually preparing. I'm probably going to write a book about checkpoints one day, so I'm doing my research, you know. Yes. What I mean? So
how to get the most out of them. How much cheese can you eat in a checkpoint? Yeah.
How many people can you say, how you doing, you know? So
how many pork pies can he stuff in any room in his bag?
Yeah, that's the thing. You're carrying layers, synthetic layers. I'm trying to get stuff. I'm trying to get food in. But and I pay the price for that as well. But Steve and I spoke, I think it was just today, actually, not on this recording, about heat and heat management. Did you have, how did you adapt in 2021 to that heat? How did you manage that? Were you taking on more fluids at checkpoints, or was that in your mind?
Yeah, so the first way that I managed it that I've failed to do before was slow down. Just got to slow down. And then secondly, drink more. I mean, I'm perennial. I think I live my life half dehydrated, and I don't drink enough. And then if you then get yourself into that awful downward spiral of nausea where you can't eat anything, then you can't drink anything either. You know, if you don't eat enough, you can eat something and soon feel better. If you've got dehydrated, you're not coming out of that anytime soon. You don't suddenly rehydrate your body in the space of an hour or so. So I think I just made sure that I'd drunk enough, and certainly on when it was really hot out of Dalemain, heading out up Howe Town and up over Fewsdale, I think I actually laid a little stream as you kind of climbing up Fewsdale, and people generally fill the bottles there. I just lay down in it, just cool your body. Like people putting a cap in it and think, I just lay down in the water, just get in and submerse yourself. And people go, I got to drink that water now. And your sweaty body that's been out for the last 16 hours is in my way. So yeah, cool yourself down. So along Hawes Water, you know, it's like a furnace down there, isn't it, as you run into Mardale. But there's loads of little streams that come down. Stop at every single one and throw water on your arms, fill your hat with water, put it over your head, and just keep your core temperature down. And I think it just worked. You know, I wish it would work routinely, but it just kind of worked that year for sure.
And when you're saying that you finished and you felt great after 100 miles, can you say how that feels, Nick, for you to be feeling great? Were you still feeling like strong? Could you have went on? How does that feel when you say that you're feeling great?
Yeah. So because, you have low points and kind of like you're coming through Chapel Style, we're kind of feeling tired. I was with my mate Andy. So Andy and I have done a load of races together, and we run together. But we don't run together. So we run together, but if he wants to run off, that's fine. If I run off, we call it a piece of elastic, and the elastic stretches, but you can guarantee by the time we get to Ambleside, we've both come back together, and we've done all our finishes together, bar last year where he finished and I went to Whitehaven Hospital. But we come through chapel style and we're both feeling a bit kind of like a bit down. And then we kind of like come back to life and think, right, we're in the last 10 miles. And we just started overtaking people and we got faster and faster. And we got to Tilberthwaite. And people are stopping, they're sitting down and they're making these fabulous toasties at Tilberthwaite. Oh, and they're trying to tempt you. It's like being tempted by the devil. Come sit down and have a toastie. We're like, we're on it. We're on it, mate. We're going. And we ran. Yeah. Come have my apple. And we're off. We're off up them steps, overtaking people. And there's still a lot of people out. And people are making way for you. So, oh, coming through, thinking that there's some mad 50 runner coming past you. And then groups of people seeing there's these two idiots doing 100 that are absolutely spanking it because we just felt great. And we just flew over the tops and legged it down the road from the mines down into Coniston. And yeah, I could have kept going. Without a doubt, could have kept going. It's adrenaline mostly. Your feet are killing you, but you forget your feet are hurting because you know you've only got 4 miles to go. And so you forget all the pain. It's weird. Your mind is a really powerful thing and it can convince your body to do stuff that you previously thought your body wasn't capable of. And that's what I love about it.
We had the privilege of speaking to Damien Hall on the podcast on not so long ago, and he was regaling his first ultra. It was the wall, wasn't it, John, that he did from Carlisle to Newcastle and it being a sort of real death march, and he got to the last mile and then all of a sudden he found himself running again, whereas, you know, 15 minutes before he was like just walking to, and it's that lure of the finish line. I speak about it a lot, is so powerful, and you've just described it to an absolute T there. I loved your elastic analogy, just, you know, you and your pal, there's a closeness and a bond about that I really like, you know, that even though sometimes you're running shoulder to shoulder, other times there's maybe half a mile, a mile between you, but you're still in some way mentally connected. I love that.
It's pretty special. It's and it's just it's almost funny now. It's like, you know, we go off and we talk about strategies and things. We don't talk a lot about racing. We just have to enjoy it. But the one thing's for sure, you can guarantee that we're like, you know, two bits of a magnet that need to go back together again. So come to finish, we'll always come through that finishing line side by side. It's just uncanny.
That's cool.
Sorry, John, I was going to nick on to the next question, but you were away to ask something else there, so you go for it.
It was just related to what Nick had said about how the mind's a powerful thing. We train physically, obviously, to get our bodies prepared to do these ultra events. Is the mind something that you've developed as well? Like resilience in there, is that something that you've consciously worked on?
Yeah, I think... I guess the question is, how do you train your mind? I don't know how I can answer that, because I think your mind becomes trained through experience. It's going to be really hard to know how you're going to feel when you're in that dark hole, when you think you can't go on anymore, you're exhausted, or you've been nauseous for hours and hours. You can't replicate that in training. I think you've kind of got to go through it. And the way to learn from it and get better from it is to embrace it. So, you know, if you've ever had a DNF and people feel down about not finishing a race for whatever, just you take that and you actually build from it. So actually failing at something isn't failing. It's actually building the next stepping stone to not repeat that and use that to get better again. And I've got to say, I'm more fascinated with the mental aspects about resilience in endurance racing than I am about the physical performance, because I think I'm probably a pretty stubborn person. If you to ask any of my friends or certainly my family, they'd certainly say that I'm a bit of a sticker. It's quite rare for me to give up on something, so I'm pretty stubborn. But even then, you can describe yourself as being resilient, but you only know if you're resilient or not when you're staring absolute misery in the face and you can manage to make yourself keep going. And I think the strategies you can do to help that, and you can prepare yourself for that by visualizing where you want to be. That's how I talked about the Highland Fling earlier on. Like, the I had a visualization for the Highland Fling. Bear in mind, that was a, what, 53-mile race, and I'd never done that before. I'd never run on the route. I'd not never done a recce, so I was quite nervous about it. But I'd seen the finishes, and I'd seen the red carpet, and I'd seen the Piper would be playing, and I had this visualization in my head of running down that finish line to finish. And I had my usual rough spot, probably somewhere towards the top of Loch Lomond. And I just focused on what that was going to feel like to finish. So I wasn't focusing on how many miles I had to go or what was going on. I focused on what it was going to feel like running into the finish of that race. And so whatever your own strategy is, you've got to have something. You've got to have a strong why you want to be there. What is it you're doing this for? You might be doing it for charity. I've done a few of my Latelands. I've done with people in mind. But you've got to have a strong reason for whatever you do. It doesn't just apply to running. You know, I use this philosophy with our kids. It doesn't relate to racing in particular. It relates to anything you're going to do in life. You know, have a conviction and stick to it. So that'll get you through all the hardships that you'll face physically, because we know our body will do it. I guess with experience, you know that your body is actually going to do stuff. It's like, you know, when you get that elation towards the end, like you start running again. Who knew I could run? You know, I've just been walking for 3 hours. Who knew I could run? It's in there. It's just your brain. Your brain is stopping you doing stuff. So the mind is fascinating.
It's like, there's the finish there. Oh, let's go then, you know?
It's like you're doing a 6-minute mile.
Yeah, and I like that. And you used the word sticker alongside the word stubborn. I'm sure there's been other terms that your family have used to describe you as well. I totally get that visualization thing. That's really powerful. And other things you were saying there about having a why and the reason for doing it. These are brilliant tips for anybody listening in who's coming to Connacht, and not just for the first time, but if you're coming back to be doing that, start thinking. If you don't already, start thinking about that kind of stuff.
Stephen, I'll let you
hand over to the next.
No, that was really good. Segment. I really enjoyed that. Thanks, Nick. Although I'm going to flip the switch now, because we just spoke about your most wonderful Lakeland experience. What about your most challenging Lakeland experience, or indeed experiences?
I'll be multiple. I'll grade them. I'll grade them, and I'll start from the worst and go. So nothing's gonna top last year, because obviously my race ended at Buttermere last year when I managed to trip over something or nothing on a flat piece of path and shatter my shoulder into about 4 pieces. So that was the end of my 5th. 27 miles, just come off Scarth Gap, down onto the Lakeshore Path, and you've got just under 5K, I think, 3 miles or so, into Buttermere. Dreaming about chocolate milkshakes, because I've got some great milkshakes at Buttermere. And just kicked something, innocuous, fell down, caught my elbow in a rock, and it just, I'm moving fairly quick by my standards at 1 o'clock in the morning. And just the velocity punched my arm through my shoulder and shattered it into a number of pieces. So that's got to be the most challenging, because, you know, I say I don't give up easily, but if you take me away in an ambulance, I probably haven't got much choice. So other than that, I think probably the most challenging part of the race I've had, I had to think about it, was probably the year, so 2019, which was actually my fastest year, it was the year of PBs, started quite hot, and then overnight it got a little bit colder, and running into Dockray, probably 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning, you come along the old coach road, which is a bit of a mind killer. It's not particularly exciting terrain. Your body's thinking, hold on a minute, why haven't you been to sleep? So your body's probably on a bit of a low, tired, a little bit hungry, and it started throwing it down with rain. And I was with Andy, the elastic was quite short at that point. And I started chucking it down with rain really badly, put our coats on, but we were already wet. And we got to the Dockray checkpoint, which is basically a gazebo in the corner of a field. And we go in there, and it was like a field, you know, a MASH field hospital. There's people there who were blue hypothermic foil blankets wrapped around them, medics trying to tend to people who were, you know, shaking like, and I can't swear, can I, shaking like a pooing dog. And it was really scenes. And I put a thermal layer on, I put my waterproofs on, and I'm stood there, I'm shaking, and my lips are blue, and Andy's looking at me and he's going, mate, you know, you look terrible. And I'm absolutely freezing, I'm just shaking away, and it bouncing down with rain outside this little gazebo. All these people around is DNFing, people DNFing left, right, and centre. And so it was quite an awful place. And we kind of just said, look, just need to go. Probably didn't have enough kit. So if I had my little synthetic layer that I was talking about, that would have perhaps kept me warm, but I didn't. But I put on what I had in my bag and said, right, we just need to leave. We just need to leave, because otherwise I'm going to sit down and my race is over. And I'm like, and there's no way I'm quitting. And Andy, so he was okay. He wasn't shivering and shaking like me, but we were cold. And the only way to stop being cold is to move and get moving. So we got out of the checkpoint, and thankfully we trotted down the road, down into Docra itself, and then up over Air Force. You start to come out of it a bit, stop raining, generate a bit more heat, and we kind of warmed up. But I looked back on that and underestimated how close I'd been to absolutely jibbing. And that would have been out of my hands at that point, I guess, you know. So there's a few lessons there.
So turn jibbing.
Jibbing.
I know, that's a good dialect one.
Yeah. I've never heard that before.
Jibbing, no. You jib it off, yeah.
Is that sack, yeah. It?
Sack it off, jib it off, yeah.
Right, okay.
I like a dialect word that we do, Nick.
There you go. Add it to the dialect bank.
Okay, cool. So, from the most wonderful experience to the most challenging, and quite the way you described that injury, quite horrific, you know. So, and ended up in hospital as well. What about getting off the course? Sorry, Stephen, you come in.
I was actually going to say that. How was that experience? It, like, okay, realization of what, wait a minute, this is a game ender. And then you said you were maybe quite nearish a checkpoint, but no.
So I was, I was probably still maybe nearly 3 miles away. And so I went down, and of course, like you do, I tried to get up thinking, you know, I'm all right, and then immediately fell straight back down again because, you know, I was concussed, and my arm was like spinning around like a kind of like a broken helicopter blade. And a couple of guys who I was just kind of catching up to heard whatever banshee like scream that I'd made and come back to me, and God bless them, a pair of them stuck with me, picked me up, and walked me, just walked me, because I'm meandering all over the place. So I was able to walk, and I was kind of like holding my arm, walked me to the checkpoint. And again, that comes back to the spirit of the race, guys who, you know, gave up their own time to just selflessly stick with me. And if that had happened halfway off Scarth Gap, you know, and really, you know, I'd just done all the steep, gnarly bits, but I think if it happened there, it would have been a mountain rescue jobby. But I made it to the checkpoint, and they got off and finished the race. And then the lovely ladies at Buttermere looked after me while we waited, I think, 5 hours for an ambulance to come, because it was a Saturday night. And it was not good. But I did have a milkshake eventually.
Priority one, where's the milkshake? And just on that, how did you recover? Well, obviously you've recovered from it now if you're signed up for this year, but did that?
Yeah, it took a while. I mean, being the stubborn kind of person I am, I think I was running again in September, just walking and jogging a little bit. But I've just been paranoid. I'm like, I'm okay, I can run, I just can't fall over. And I do fall over a lot. I mean, I'm like Mr. Calamity Kid, so it's been a slow journey. I probably didn't really start running properly. Certainly didn't go anywhere into the lakes or Snowdonia or anywhere until February. So it was all local trails, very, very careful. So I made my comeback event, the Northern Traverse. Just thought I'd do a 200-mile event just to see if I could actually finish an event. And that probably tells you more about how stupid I am than I could have just entered a marathon or something. But yeah,
I got a 5K.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of all right again now. I mean, my shoulder's working okay. I do quite a bit of kayaking, so I was more concerned that I wouldn't be able to get my arm up to be able to. I've got a sea kayak, but it seems to be working okay. But yeah.
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 200-mile comeback race.
Brilliant.
Mark of the man.
And I'm just thinking about the terrain of the lakes. I mentioned that earlier on. Some of the paths are bloody awful, you know, but you're going down, especially, I think we experienced it last year, when they're a wee bit wetter, a wee bit wet, yeah, and they get a wee bit slippy, a lot of that sort of slate stuff. Can I ask you the question about your preferred shoes? What do you wear?
Mm. So these days, I just wear Hokas for the whole thing now. So I think I had Speed Goat 5s on for the last couple, but I'm in Mafati Speed 4s, which are decent grip, but comfy. Comfy for me. I used to do the first 50 to Dalemain in a trail shoe, and then I'd switch to Hokas because of the god-awful, rocky, horrific paths that you come across. One year I made a mistake of just switching to another trail shoe. I think I phoned my wife as I was coming over Garban Pass. I got some signal and rang and just ranted, I'm never doing this race again. I hate these paths. It's killing my feet. But it's my stupid fault. I had the wrong shoes on. So, yeah, I'd just stick with Hokas right the way through. Maybe if I was faster, I'd want a more nimble shoe. But Hokas will do for me. They cushion my arthritic toes and my arthritic knees. And they got reasonable grip, you know. They work pretty good. They've improved a lot, I think. I did my first, I think I had a Stinson Hoka shoe in 2013. They weren't particularly grippy, but yeah, that's probably definitely my choice. I see people doing it in all sorts of like minimal kind of minimal drop shoes because they want to get the feel of the trail. Last thing you need going over Gatesgarth or Garvan Pass is the feel of that trail.
<That's> You need to be
pushing from that trail as far as you can be.
You're here.
But if it's slippy, if those rocks are slippy, you're screwed. There's nothing on that kind of rock. You know, if you're in the Peak District, you've got grippy gritstone rock, and even when it's wet, it's pretty good. Even in Snowdonia, depending on which bit of Snowdonia, if you're on the Glidders, the rock there can be slippy. Most wet rock, nothing's going to be good on it, to be honest with you. So you just got to go careful, haven't you?
Exactly. Another reason just to go steady.
Yeah. Can we move on to food? Yeah.
Got there eventually.
What have you got?
Well, I mean, a big thing of if you're doing the 50-mile event or if you're doing the 100-mile event is about how you fuel yourself. Yes, there are aid stations and these are plentiful in supply. But is there a preferred food for in between? So what's going in your pack? How are you feeling yourself?
It's a difficult one because when you're doing the 100, you don't want to carry too much because of the weight. Mm-hmm. And I can like different things at different times. So you can carry, I don't know, like a bag of Haribo, you know, sweet, sweet things. Then I'll go off the sweet stuff. So then I'll carry cereal bars, Flapjack, you know, the mountain fuel bars I quite like. So fuel wise, I generally use something like, I used to use Tailwind. I use Mountain Fuel now. I think Mountain Fuel, the taste-free version works really well for me. So you can stick, 150, 200 calories in your bottle and there's free calories without having to chew some food. But I generally like real food. I don't do gels. I'll have a gel in my pack. So, if you get a real massive sugar dip, you could take a gel, or, break glass in case of emergency. But I couldn't run an ultra on gels. Well, I have tried to do that and failed really badly. So real food. Generally base it around something that is reasonably portable. What I really do like to eat is fruit. like juicy but tinned fruit, because you can't carry that, so you have to rely on that in the checkpoints. And most of the checkpoints in the Lakeland haven't got that, with the exception probably Braithwaite's probably the best for a variety of the kind of food I like: rice pudding, jelly, fruit, tin fruit, mandarin oranges, peaches, something that is wet and easy to chew. I always had a real problem trying to eat sandwiches. You know, marshalled at Mardale one year, must have made 500 peanut butter sandwiches. But when you rock up and you've got a dry mouth and you put a peanut butter sandwich in, I mean, it's going to take me 5 miles to swallow it. So sandwiches can be a bit more challenging, but I've learned to eat that kind of food to force myself to do it. But I suppose, yeah, the kind of food I carry will just be some of the simpler stuff, some cereal bars with a high calorie value, mm-hmm. and they vary depending on what I can get my hands on. And then try and eat more checkpoint food.
Yeah, I was going to say that one thing that's really well out there in the runner information packs and everything is what is on the menu at each of the checkpoints. And I found that really helpful first time, just to know what sort of expectations were set. Because you're that used to on your own training runs being self-sufficient. So,
yeah.
In fact, I think, John, I think Lakeland 50 and 21 was the first ultra that I'd done where it was more, you know, the food was supplied for you in the checkpoints rather than you having a drop bag that you filled with your own goodies that was your soaring loaves with massive of butter on them. That's my that's my usual and milkshake. Yeah,
like
I'm a milkshake fan. Whereas this, you were almost feeling a wee bit out of control, is it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because you're relying on somebody else. Now, they're brilliantly stocked and freshened up all the time, you know, being on the other side at Nick at the checkpoint with your run club. So it's that read what's at them, and so that you know, okay, at Kent Mere, they do smoothies.
Yeah, definitely that. The problem is, you rock up at a checkpoint and you look at everything that's there and you can't face any of it. And I've done it. I've rocked up there. I can't face a sandwich. My mouth's too dry to put crisps in and there isn't really anything else. And then you leave with nothing. So if you always have something of your own to try and be ready for that. But yeah, but if you gen up a little bit on what's going to be at each checkpoint, because there is great information that Mark put out, and the checkpoints do tend to traditionally do a certain kind of thing, like Buttermere is famous for its milkshakes, which is great. Milkshakes and hot dogs, fantastic. Braithwaite, because it's in the village hall, they do everything there, and I've begged all kinds of food. We once had about five people scavenging over. I got them to bring out a tin of peaches, and I thought I'd get all this, and then someone went, "He's got peaches," and then all of a sudden there's like half a dozen guys fighting over a tin of peaches. So that's always one of my favorites. And then Blencathra, they tend to have salted potatoes, so get to know what's where. And then you mentioned the smoothies at Kentmere. Oh, absolute bliss. I'll just sit next to the fruit smoothie machine, say, can I have another one, please? Can I have another one, please? Because fruit is my thing. I love fruit and milkshakes.
I'm just wondering who got the juice out of the tin of peaches.
Yeah, well, I had that.
Because that's the good
I
stuff.
I asked for the tin. Yeah, I'll share some stuff. You're not having the juice.
It's like the bottom of the pot noodle, John.
Oh, that's the beautiful. That's the what do they call that? The elixir. That's the good stuff. Can I also ask the question as well, or maybe it's not a question. It's more of a statement, actually, or a comment for anybody listening in about checkpoints. And if you get to a checkpoint and your appetite has gone, then I would say just take a wee bit, get some liquids in. Maybe cleanse the palate a wee bit, because you should not leave that checkpoint without taking anything on, because you're going to pay the price for that later on. So spend a wee bit of time, look at all the options. The options have grown, I think. It is literally a buffet.
Smorgasbjörg.
Smorgasbjörg, yeah. So there will be something there for you, but just take your time. Even if it's a cup of soup, you know, I've seen that they were making like some soups and stuff. So, because when your levels drop, it's very, very hard to get them back up. So just make sure you're just topping up. So just a 50 or 100 mile buffet, just crack on.
It is, yeah, definitely. You know, it's, and that's why I say, you know, you can waste too much time in the checkpoints, so don't hang around. But equally, if you're going to be there, don't pass up an opportunity to, you know, you wouldn't stop at a petrol station and think, oh, I really can't be bothered to put any petrol in. It's going to take me 5 minutes. I'll just carry on then. You're going to run out of fuel, aren't you? So you do have to do it. And that's one of the things I've had to teach myself, because I've done that. I've been in and out of checkpoints and really just couldn't be able to face anything. I can carry sandwiches out of checkpoints, and they've been in a bush, you know, half a mile later, because I just couldn't physically put them in my mouth. So I think the answer is to not let yourself get to that point. Eat a little bit and often, rather than letting you, you know, because, you know, certainly my digestive system, if I don't put anything in it, it'll shut down. And then it's really hard. That's when you get the nausea then, when you then put something in it and your stomach's not having any of it.
And see, for people listening in to this prior to the event in July, listen now, because what's going to happen is you'll think in the end of July, August, I should have listened to that guy. So then it'd be the person that's listening in and going, I'll be fine, it'll be all right. This is your, Nick is here to furnish us with the advice of his experience. So take it on board is what I would encourage you to do.
Okay. 100 milers, do you... You say you didn't hang about checkpoints, so I take it there's no any kind of stop for a wee 20 minute or anything at any point, is there, Nick?
So the only, my times have got quicker because I've spent less time in the checkpoint. So what I've tried to do is only in my head have a plan to stop at a number of limited checkpoints for a bit longer. So I'll stop at Braithwaite for a bit longer because you're at about 30 miles there, I think. I thought, right, I need a good feed. I know it's got the food I like. I'm going to stop there. I'll generally change my socks there because it's probably been, you know, definitely been wet at some point. And then from there on, you know, there aren't really any points where, unless it's raining, you're not going to be going through any bogs or anything. So I may well change my socks there. And that in itself means they're probably going to be there 20 minutes. A good feed up. So Braithwaite, I'll generally stop at. Dale Main at the halfway point. Can of Guinness. That's the first thing I do at Dale Main every year. First thing I do is have a can of Guinness for breakfast, which is fantastic. Everyone else is drinking electrolytes and pouring powders out, and I'm popping a little cheeky can of Guinness for breakfast.
I love it.
But I'll generally get changed there, depending on what the weather's been like. If it's been really wet, I'll change my top. Re-lubricate everything. So Dale Main is a pit stop. Yeah. But I want to be out of Dale Main before the 50 runners start, just so you're not getting barraged by them. And I've done that all but 1 year. I get out of there. So Dale Main, I'll stop at. Then that's it, really. I just try and minimise where I'll stop at. My friends are always going to be at Spardale, at Mardale, so I'll stop and have a little chat with them. But Kentmere, I'll have a smoothie. Everywhere else, it's minimum time. Don't sit down. Keep yourself moving as long as you got some fuel in.
Brilliant. Okay. I love the thought of a can of Guinness. I never knew there was Guinness in these bags at Dale Main. Stood and watched that for 2 years in a row now. Never knew there was Guinness in there. So because that's only people that do get a drop bag, isn't it? It's the 100 runners at Dale Main.
First thing I ask for, get my drop bag, is get my Guinness out, because it's got a little bit of alcohol, but it's got energy. You know, it's about 250 calories in a can of Guinness, and it gives you a little bit of a buzz. It's better than Tailwind and Mountain Fuel.
Yeah, and you look forward to it. That's the thing. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a little treat. Yeah, that's what that distracts you, because the run through Dacre, through the lanes into Dale Main, are pretty grim. There's quite a lot of boring lanes, and I'm just thinking about popping that can of Guinness and it kind of speeds you up a bit. That little things, you know, little things just to get your mind going the right way.
Although, please don't be turning up at Dale Main with a carryout and said, Nick said it should be okay. You can't do that. That's not what it's about. Brilliant.
I'm going to be selling cans of Guinness this year. I'm going to, nothing else in my drop bag. There's going to be like a 12-pack. And I'm going to be selling them.
Stephen, can I just go back? Because I know it's talking about aid stations and carrying your own food and stuff. And you were saying there it's almost about you're like giving up the responsibility of, because I know that you like to carry things that you like, you know what I mean? So yeah, you, yeah. So
yeah.
Well, so they've just got to be prepared to make that compromise, don't you? And as you say, you get that menu of things that's coming out. So it's very important that you read that, isn't it? Stephen.
Aye, no, sorry, yeah, you're asking me a question. Aye. Yeah. Oh, it's really important that you've got awareness of what's ahead on the menu. And you're right, I do. I think I took a chocolate milkshake, carried one last year because it's almost those Chocomel ones, three cans, 250
yeah,
milk cans.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they kind of can just, you know how you've got a stretchiness in your pack. Well, you know, and it, yeah, shove that in there.
Yeah.
And then my infamous trail mix, which is just basically cashews and pretzels and everything that's in the cupboard that the kids haven't ate from Christmas time, just mashed into a bag. And that's there is my sort of contingency planning that I can always stretch for.
And that chocolate milk, that's almost like next can of Guinness, isn't it, for you? It's a treat for the time, the right time and right place.
Could maybe get into the Guinness thing as well. So, you get that Guinness with the coffee infused into it as well, don't you? It's like Guinness.
Yeah, I tried that. That's all right, actually.
That could do the trick. Anyway, we'll speak to our sponsors over in the Bubba Guy lunches.
Well, a friend of mine worked for Diageo, who make Guinness, and for years I tried to persuade them to get Guinness to, you know, so look, you don't have to pay me anything, just provide me with beer and I'll be your sponsor boy. I've got a can of Guinness in every photograph going. I never got to be sponsored by Guinness. I'm still available.
Nick, we've asked, well, our next question is about tips for first time Lakeland runners. This whole recording is full of tips for both first time and returning runners, but take yourself back to early 2013, before you had set a foot on the course. What have you learned that you wish you'd known then before starting?
Sure. Yeah, it's a good question. I think first of all, I'll go back to something we've already discussed quite a lot of it, but I think you've got to have the why. You've got to have a strong goal, what you're doing it for, and that can be many things. It can be a personal thing, a charity thing. It could be the one thing I say be wary of having a time goal. I will be quite wary of it being a performance goal, particularly if you're a, you know, maybe a less experienced runner, because you can do, like, you know, we're both doing a run off around that field because you're looking at your watch and you're thinking about time, and that's when it will come unstuck. So have a strong goal, have a plan, but have a plan B and a plan C and a plan D, and be prepared to change that plan depending on what the weather is doing. So listen to what Mark says, because actually he can be a little bit grumpy, but he actually gives you some pretty sound advice. And if it's 30 degrees outside and you're thinking you're going to set yourself a new PB, it's probably unlikely. So just be the best that you can be on that day. Live in the moment, just go out to enjoy it. I think we could all, I've certainly been sucked into performance, and I'm a really competitive kind of person. As I got older, my competitive side maybe slipped a bit, but I still want to be the best I can be. But yeah, advice for new runners is all about that, and also to have that belief that although it will go wrong, and something will go wrong in a 50-mile distance, and certainly in a 100-mile distance, something's going to go wrong at some point, possibly more than once, but you'll get through it. It's not, you know, if something goes wrong in a marathon, it's generally towards the end, and it'll probably unhinge the rest of your race. Something goes wrong in a 50-mile race, you're going to come through that and you'll forget about that towards the end. So just have that resilience to know that if it goes wrong, it's not the end of the world. And don't give up when you get to an aid station feeling exhausted, that's it, I'm sacking it off. Sit down for 5 minutes, compose yourself, eat something, and chances are you're going to feel better within 5 or 10 minutes, and then you'll carry on. So yeah, just be prepared for things to to put you in a place where you perhaps weren't ready to be in, because it'll get better.
Fantastic advice.
Mm. Things will go to shit. That will happen. But you will recover. You will recover. So it's just about having... But you know what? That, again, something that a lot of people will learn when they go in and do their first endurance event. So this is your official heads up, dear people. Yeah. It might not go the way you thought it might. And you've just got to be flexible and adjust your stuff. Brilliant, Nick. Thank you very much for that.
Okay. Well, we're cruising towards the finish line, which is where all the good stuff is. And we've got a final question for you that is really important to us here. And that is a song choice from you for your song that sums up Wakeland, whether it's an inspirational one, a motivational one, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, music's a really emotive thing, and I love my music. I don't listen to music when I'm running, certainly not in lakes or Snowdonia, wherever I'm at, because I want to be in the environment. So I don't actually associate any music that I've listened to in the Lakeland, but I think probably, I guess if there's one piece of music that kind of evokes the event for me, it's standing waiting for the 100 to start. We're all gathering in the pen area, a load of people, all kind of twitchy and nervous, and he plays Thunderstruck, AC/DC, and it's kind of like that. It's that spine tingling build up and the pumping of the bass. So that's probably, I have to think about it and think, yeah, that's when, yeah, because they do the whole thing, spiritual and moving before you start. But when you just stood around chatting on with people and they start to play that, it's like, shit's getting real. Here we go. And so,
It's got that wee, like, jingly jangly guitar intro, isn't it? And then it's just like, brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's it all day long.
Perfect.
Great choice. Okay. Something I don't think we've mentioned, actually, is that Nick is going back this year to hopefully, please God, pick up that bit of slate. Yeah?
Yeah. Number 5.
Yeah.
Unfinished business.
When you have 5 successful completions of the Lakeland 100, you get a piece of slate. Where are you going to put that slate, Nick?
Depends where I'm allowed to. So the medals, the only medals I'm allowed, they sit in the back room here in the office. But I might get to put it in the living room. We've got a bookcase downstairs. All my running books are down there. It may get to sit down there. Actually, the only reason I'm actually going for number 5 was because my daughter, my youngest daughter, it's a quick story. I'd done 350s. I finished my 3rd 100, and like that's quite neat. 3 of each. Mm-hmm. That'll do me, thank you. I hadn't kind of envisaged 5 of these things. Anyway, the Sunday ceremony comes along, and my youngest daughter sits with my mate Elastic Andy, his little boy, and my little girl sat at the front of the ceremony, and they watched the presentation for the 500 legends. And you know, it's a proper rabble rousing celebration of these people. And so we came out, and the kids come up to us and said, "You're getting one of them. You're going back, and you're having one of these." And like, that means I've got to go and come back twice more and do 2 more 100-mile races. Thank you. So if I do it, the only reason I'm doing it is because our kids actually put us up for it. So if I get the trophy, it'll be sat in my living room in the bookcase. End of story.
I think you've found your why. Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. Got, yeah. No better reason than that. It's brilliant. Thank you very much for sharing that, Nick.
Cheers.
Brilliant. And I think we're just going to say a massive thank you, Nick, for your time. And for sharing your, we could probably talk another couple hours.
Yeah, I could be here all night. This isn't hard work for me. This is fabulous. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, brilliant. As have I, it's been brilliant to get an insight into your experience and your adventures, and hopefully lots more to come. But I wish you every success in getting that 5th piece of slate. Hopefully we'll be there to see it as well.
Yeah, be good to see you there, guys.
That would be good. But thank you very much, Steve. I'll hand over to you to say
thanks very much, Nick. I really enjoyed our chat. And yeah, like John says, hopefully we'll be able to catch you in Coniston for your annual family vacation.
cheapest holiday you'll ever get.
Oh, brilliant. Everybody's happy. It's fantastic. Yeah. You can't beat it. You can't beat that. And yeah, and good luck for, well, whatever, 8-9 weeks left of your training. Yeah, it sounds like you know the crack. Just watch out for wee stones on the paths this year, and everything will be hunky dory.
I'll be the one wrapped in cotton wool, and I'll be in one of those zobes. I'm just gonna let it roll down the hill in the zob.
Don't put it past that mark. Fantastic. No, thanks very much, Nick. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Great. Thanks very much, guys, and good luck to everybody for the race.